the seats that are going to be fiercely contested in a couple of years in the general election, a lot of those towns that ultimately will be fought over have football clubs in them. And the EFL, the professional game, the semi-professional game, the supporters are all behind the implementation of a regulator. There is only the elite in the Premier League that aren't. It's a little bit of a representation of society. Vested interest and greed will try and control where the money goes. And the reality of it is it shouldn't happen in society and it shouldn't happen in football.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
All of us here this week, which is good and makes a little bit of a change, doesn't it? It's been a while since all three of us have been here. And yet, I always say, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton and Terry DeFellin. For the last couple of episodes, it's just been two of us, and then we had a break in the middle of it. But here we are, back when football, club football at least, is on a break. International breaks, they're lovely, aren't we? We've had to wait a bit longer for this one. England are playing tonight. It's Monday night as we record, as usual. As soon as we're finished here, we'll be making ourselves comfortable, sat in front of the telly to watch England-Germany, won't we, lads? Because I know there's nothing at stake anymore for England anyway, because sadly, our nation's league odyssey has come to an end this season. But that doesn't stop us watching it, does it, Jan?
It doesn't stop us watching it, Graham. You're right. I was wondering, actually, even for the Italy game the other day, what kind of viewing figures do they really get on Channel 4 on a Saturday night? How many people are going to be watching the England game? And how many now we as relegated, I wonder how many people are going to be watching it tonight. I will have a look in, I would suggest. I will have a look in,
well,
see how they get on.
It was a Friday night, so I suppose it might have got a few more. I mean, like, they wouldn't have gone up against the first episode of Strictly, would they? That would be suicide putting on a Saturday night.
Madness.
Terry, you'll probably be watching the game anyway, because it's Germany as well, won't it? So it's of interest to you in more than one reason, isn't it?
It's possible somebody might ask my opinion on the German national team between now and the start of the World Cup.
Yes.
So I probably ought to watch them. So yes, I will be watching the game intently.
Yes. As far as the context of the Nations League is concerned, though, Germany can't win the group, but they're safe from relegation because England, from five games, have only got 2 points. And, this is a competition we bigged up. We bigged it up for years, years and years and years, when Michel Platini, remember him, introduced the idea. But maybe it's lost its shine a bit. And I'm not just saying that because England have been rubbish in it. And
yes, you are.
Yes, you are.
All right, maybe I am saying that because England are rubbish in it. But it's not been so much fun this time, is it? It's just been a bit meh. And the time before that, the first year was brilliant when it had the three-team groups. And we had that crazy knockabout game at Wembley when we were being relegated at one point of the game and then we were topping the group about 20 minutes later. You know, you look back and they think that's what the Nations League was, and what we have now is just a bit boring. In times gone by, if this was a proper tournament, Gareth Southgate would be out of a job by now, wouldn't he? But he's not. No one cares that he's got England relegated. Is this a massive failure of the Nations League as much as it is a massive failure of England's? Terry?
Can I just say that by your bemoaning and lamenting the passing of the three-team format League A in the Nations League, that this podcast, not only did it spawn the first Nations League fans, but it's also spawned the first Nations League hipsters as well. I don't watch the Nations League now, it's four teams.
This is how schisms are formed, you know that?
Obviously, the three-team format was super fun, but yeah, not sustainable because it's just too much action and adventure and fun and hijinks for international football. You know, it just shouldn't be like that, and just too insecure for the larger clubs. But it's a result that will have its consequences for England because, I mean, at the moment right now, or everyone is thinking about the World Cup, and we're thinking really about these results in terms of what happens next in terms of the World Cup. But there are broader consequences. It's not been a classic season, largely because of the World Cup, because the way the fixtures have been had to be scheduled. The international break schedules are different this year. We've played a disproportionate number of fixtures in June when nobody wants to be playing football, unless it's the World Cup or the European Championship. And we put in an incredibly poor show and had that really bad result against Hungary. And we've not really recovered from that. But the broader consequences, you know, for England are, people might think, oh, you know, relegation to League B or who cares? Well, the quality of the teams and the draw of those teams, you know, in terms of ticket sales, you know, will have an effect. Once upon a time, not long ago, England, you know, these games were friendly matches, or most of them would have been friendly matches, and England would have been able to have drawn much bigger nations to Wembley or gone elsewhere for big high-profile friendly. But now that won't happen. You know, we have to, you know, face the prospect of perhaps playing against, well, I won't name the nations because I don't want to be rude, but I'm sure you know what I mean. Teams that we would not organise friendlies with ordinarily. And that's going to have an effect financially.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, in League A, you're pretty much guaranteed to have at least one big hitter in the group with you. This time we had Italy and Germany in with us. Now in League B, if you're looking to sell out Wembley, you're probably got to be hoping that you're going to be drawn against another home nation, which is going to get people excited. But maybe not from the teams that are currently in there or the ones that will be coming up from League C. Is this something that we should be worrying? Or do we think we'd only been playing friendlies anyway? What's the point of worrying about this? It's still competitive and it's probably the better to do when we go in between tournaments anyway. What do you think? What do you think of the Nations League?
I think a couple of things. One, if we'd absolutely smashed Germany, Italy and Hungary, we would be talking about how amazing this competition is and the whole country would have gone crazy. Just because England are shit, it doesn't mean that this is a bad competition. or have performed badly, to be fair. There's an argument to say that a lot of these lads don't necessarily start for their own club sides. There is a World Cup on the horizon. Do you really want to get injured playing a friendly against Hungary? No disrespect to Hungary, when you could be playing in the World Cup. So there are many factors, you know, as to why England have performed so badly. But the reality is it is much more interesting. We are even talking about it now.
Yeah.
So it clearly is interesting. And hopefully people are listening to this and thinking what we're saying is interesting as well. But I think it'll do England good playing other sides. And remind themselves that, you know, that there is an expectation when you pull on that shirt and the expectation is to perform, and they just haven't done that really. Mm. But like I said, I think there's probably reasons for that.
Terry, if we'd done well in this running, would they be that excited? Or would we still be thinking, hey, this is great, we're in great form for the World Cup?
I think that we, that is the collective we, and that is the fans and the media, would have got much more excited about England's prospects of winning the World Cup if we'd done one in the Nations League.
Yeah.
But that's because if you win football matches, you start to feel excited about your prospects. And it doesn't really matter, I suppose, if it's a Nations League. Jan is right to point out the Nations League is a great competition, and that hasn't changed. But we're entitled as England fans to feel a little bit flat about it and unenthusiastic because, you know, we've not really participated in it as of yet. We say it's not a big deal now. Next time around, when we are playing, you know, Iceland or Montenegro or Finland and feeling perhaps a little bit diminished and reduced as a consequence, they might think, well, actually, this is a competition worth being in because I don't want to be down here. I'd rather be up there. And that may in time then imbue some impetus on the players and on the manager and on the FA to take the competition more seriously.
Especially if we're playing Venezuela instead of Argentina or Brazil.
Oh, this is with the potential involvement of CONMEBOL.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. From next time. From the next running of the Nations League, which starts in 2024, so a little way off yet, by which time, if the Pally Pally network of UEFA and CONMEBOL has bedded in, they could be in here. And I think the plan was to get the top six South American nations going into League A and the rest of them going into League B. I wonder if this will actually affect it, Jan. England are a big draw. So do you think there'll be, oh, well, we've got some teams coming in. maybe we'll have to massage the who goes down, like they did that first year when Germany got relegated.
When Germany got relegated, yeah.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Surely, can they not go, well, sorry, England, too big to fail at football, I'd like to point out. Not politically, economically, or anything like that, as we've seen. But it did make me wonder, like, England's gone down, so is that going to make the competition less interesting? But if you're going to chuck in all this, there's some decent South American sides in there. Well, if you're impartial and you're looking at this and you go, well, there's no England, but I do get to see Brazil and Argentina. Well, England who?
Yeah.
You know, this is great.
Yeah, and Ukraine will be there because they've only got to beat Scotland in their last game. And they'll do that, won't they?
Will they? Or will Scotland go up? And there's the other thing to consider, the indignity of being in a lower league than Scotland.
Yeah, but that obviously just makes a whole joke of the whole thing anyway, then, doesn't it, really?
You're making a mockery of the Nations League.
Yeah.
It's undermining the integrity of the competition, Graham. England should be just reinstated, and that's just the end of it.
At the expense of Scotland.
Absolutely at the expense of Scotland.
I mean, like, it's 2022, for Christ's sake. Isn't that how things work these days?
It really is. That is how it works. That's how everything works.
Oh, dear. We can't even flex our financial muscle anymore now. Thanks now that the pound is worth tuppence halfpenny. It's even gone down against Ukraine's currency. They're at war.
Wow, that is a law.
Funny on that subject, the weekend I bought a new wallet. Fantastic it is. It's got a lovely shiny wheel, lovely handles, lovely glistening barrow. Fantastic.
It's going to be like Germany between the wars, isn't it?
It's Weimar Republic, yeah.
In years to come, they'll be selling £500,000 notes at flea markets.
It's when the contactless limit goes up to £100,000. So that's when you know it's gone.
I mean, we're laughing about it now, listeners. But in 6 months' time, when this podcast is cancelled because none of us can afford the server fees, and we're all living in a single room, hovering over a single mobile phone, trying to get Twitter updates, it won't be funny then.
Well, no. But hey, it won't stop Watford from sacking managers, will it?
No, it won't. So what? Why have they done it this time?
Because they're Watford.
Do they need a reason? I mean, they don't need a reason, they're Watford, but let's try and figure it out. Rob Edwards, promising young manager.
Yeah.
And the idea being that, you know, obviously this time, lads, no, we're not going to do it the way that we've done it before. We're going to bring in a young coach to come in and build something. And that was in, what was it, July? And now it's September and he's gone.
He had 11 games. And he obviously, he got Forest Green Rovers promoted to League One. So he left a gig where he was really well respected, went to an absolute basket case of a club. And they said, we've given him enough time to show what his football's all about. And he hasn't delivered. It's 11 games. It's brutal being a Watford manager, isn't it? Absolutely brutal.
He only lost 3 matches, 3 defeats in 11 games. And he was sacked. I mean, that's just, even by Watford standards, that's seriously messed up. I mean, laughing, the guy's lost his job. And now he's not like one of these ex-pros who's like made millions, you know, as a playing career. I mean, but at the same time, he must be considering the folly of taking this job because, as you say, Jan, I mean, I think he had a fairly sweet deal. Forest Green, if I remember, were a bit snippy about it when he left. They released a statement, which was a fairly sort of like, you know, throwing a bit of shade on him for the way in which it was handled. I don't know much about the lower leagues of English football anymore, sadly, but I think Forest Green Rovers are not exactly the most popular football club on the planet at the best of times anyway. So, but yeah, this is a lesson to all promising managers. If you've got a good thing going at the club you're at, maybe you just stick it out and don't take the Watford job, whatever you do. Whatever you do.
Yeah, but let's face it, he can't have been daft enough not to know what Watford are like. I mean, like, you know, it's not like one of those dating shows where he goes, oh, it's okay, I can change him.
But it is, though. It's like the young player who leaves a club to go and play for Manchester City or go and play for Liverpool or something like that. Fans of that club will be saying, don't go there because you won't get a game, you won't make it. And they're going, well, hang on, you know, I've got to back my ability to be able to make this work. Otherwise, why am I bothering with this? And so they go, and you can understand that mentality. And I guess that's probably what's happened with Rob Edwards. He's thought, well, yeah, I'm a good enough coach to do this. And I suppose it's possible that he's got a substantial payoff as a consequence, because I don't know how long he was, but I imagine he would have been paid off. So, you know, I mean, he probably won't be complaining too much because he'll have a bit of money counting to do.
Yeah, well, it's a club still benefit from parachute payments. I'm sure he's very well taken care of as far as that's concerned. And I'm sure he will be back in the game soon enough. Yeah, and I think their nose was put out of joint when Sunderland lost their manager first and had to hire someone else in. They probably looked at that and thought, hang on, we could have hired them.
or probably thought that because, you know, it happened so early in the season to us that we'd kind of stolen their crown somehow.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all right because Rob Edwards should know that there'll be a vacancy at Sunderland within the next 12 months. So he can just take his payout, put his feet up for a bit and just wait for the Sunderland job to come up, because it will.
It will. And so will the Watford job. So,
yeah.
You'll always be back there at Watford. So it's Slaven Bilic then.
Yes.
Again, back. Yeah. He's back. Slaven Bilic is back. He's back in English football because he just loves it.
Yeah.
He absolutely loves it.
He loves it at this level. He had a great time at West Brom at this level. Not so great at the Premier League, but yeah, he's working his way through the W's, West Ham, West Brom, now Watford. Do we think he can change them, though?
No, but I don't think he thinks that he can change them. I think he is quite happy to go along there and go. He's at the journeyman coach stage of his career now, Bilic, and he's gone, yeah, someone wants to hire me, fine. Yeah, no worries. 8 weeks, no problem. I'll sign your contract. Just make certain that the bit that says I get paid in full if you fire me is there. I mean, Watford. They're just the orchestrators of chaos. They're harbingers of chaos. And I think that that's it. It's because Sunderland are in the same division as them. Is they're like, no, we're not going to be out chaosed by them upstarts in the northeast. We are the chaos club and don't let anyone forget it.
They are. I mean, I can see clubs in Serie A looking at Watford thinking, blimey. A bit quick there, weren't you?
Udinese to begin with.
Yes. We wish Slaven Bilic all the best at Watford, or whoever is the manager of Watford by the time you listen to this podcast. These opinions could get old very, very, very quickly. Get them while they're
just hot. To future proof that, I'd just like to say, Graham, that I'm absolutely honoured to be appointed the new coach of Watford. I'm convinced that I can create a genuine legacy here. I'm looking forward to many, many years of developing this great team and this great football club, and I can't wait to meet Elton John.
That was beautiful, Terry.
Thanks, man.
Can't wait for that drop. Yeah.
Of course, you'll be in charge by then, yeah?
Because so. It'll be me. No, I think, they're not a bad side. For us to scrape a draw against them away was, I was really, really pleased with that result. So if he can turn them around, he might do quite well this season. But if he does well this season and gets promoted, he's going to be there for about 3 weeks into the new season, isn't he? And then he'd be gone. So, yeah, if you're the bank manager of Slaven Bilic, you're going to be quite happy.
I suppose people would look at it and say, well, it's no way to run a football club, is it? But it's not as if Watford are a terribly run club. They've just been relegated, I suppose. And at the moment, all right, they're mid-table. But even after 10 games, it's a very, very wide mid-table. I think there's only 3 points between Burnley in fourth and Birmingham in 17th. And they're right in the slap bang in the middle of that. So it's not as if they're in a terrible position. And Bilic has every opportunity to turn the team around. A couple of weeks' time, he could be nudging the automatic places. Of course, it being the Championship, it could go all over the place. But I would say that Watford still have a good chance of going up this season.
Yeah, certainly by the time you get around to managing them, I reckon there's a good chance of nudging the players.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit awkward as I'm parking up and they're unscrewing your name off the parking bay.
Yeah, well, wouldn't be the first time it's happened, though, would it, Graham?
I don't suppose they actually do that. It's probably on Velcro, isn't it, for Watford?
No, it'll be a whiteboard.
No, they pay a guy. They pay a guy to do it. This is a full-time job.
It's like the full fridge, isn't it?
They're in the car park. With a pot of whitewash and a screwdriver. 50 grand a year he gets paid.
He's the longest serving member of Watford staff and the busiest.
I feel sorry for the guy in the stationery office there. I mean, like, you know, this week's programme.
Because that's how they do it. Yeah. They don't do it digitally. They still use paper. Yes. They still use letterheaded paper. They don't.
And business cards. Definitely.
Come on, this is a business that was still using fax machines up to a couple of years ago.
Oh, man, that's great. There we go. Don't ever change, Watford. Well, no. I mean, do change constantly. Don't ever change. You're not changing. It's run like a Serie A club, isn't it, Watford? Yeah. I think we've said this before.
We have run like a Serie A club.
That's the mentality that they take. And you're right. I mean, there's no reason why they can't, you know, bounce back. They've probably looked at it and gone, it's not working out. Let's just get rid of him now. Getting someone who we know works at this level and we know will do it and that we can get on with and probably understands how it works. I don't think I've ever known a Watford coach get sacked and then complain afterwards.
No.
I don't think I've ever heard any of them publicly complain. I think they get looked after perfectly. They say, like, sorry, mate, your number's up, on you go, here's your check, chin, chin. And then that's it. They say, well, I'm going to keep my mouth shut because, you know, they might come right back round to me again. Yeah. And so I might.
Which has happened at Watford.
which has happened to Watford, yeah. Well, there's only so many sort of like journeyman coaches that you can employ that will be effective. So sooner or later, Xavi Gracia will be back before you know it. The guy they should have gone for, the guy I want to see, sorry, we're dwelling on this for far longer than we said.
No, it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
I would love to see the next one after Slaven Bilic to be Jose Bordalas, the guy who's been at Spain, who coached Getafe and recently Valencia, and does this incredibly disagreeable, really football, shithousery kind of style of football. And I think that would suit Watford right down to the ground. And I think that De Pozzo is probably look at him and say, oh, if only you'd coached in Italy. One day it'll be Gasperini. When Gasperini finally gets kicked out of Atalanta, we'll see Gasperini there for 6 glorious months. Watford will just be amazing to watch. And then he'll be out on his ass.
Yes, listeners, that's right. Terry has suggested 2 names for possible Watford manager, and neither of them was Lucien Favre.
Yeah, no. I'm trying to move away from that. I'm trying to find a different sort of like memes to follow. So
I'm surprised you didn't say Paolo Di Canio, because he'd be perfect for that club.
Is he still working, Paolo Di Canio?
He's still around.
Is he still? Yeah, I didn't mean he's still alive. I mean,
he's still alive. He'll be doing something somewhere, won't he?
Yeah. Also, Roberto Di Matteo as well. They've not employed him either. There's a guy from the past who's stolen a living in the past. So.
Given the news coming out of Italy today, I think Paolo Di Canio is going to be all right for work, I think.
Yeah, he's probably going to get Minister of Sport or something, isn't he?
I would imagine, if he isn't already.
He's been fitted up for his black shirt as we speak.
Well, we've had a lot of fun on this episode so far, but let's get serious now.
Okay.
Let's get serious. Yeah, because we mentioned politics, and politics is serious, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
No matter what people try to say that it isn't. And, well, for the last week or so, we've been sort of trying to get over the news that the fan-led review and the independent regulator in football is likely not to happen, or not under this government anyway, as it has been, as we did suspect it might be, kicked into the long grass. Well, we've talked about this just in April, so, what, 5 months ago when we were discussing this, when the last Prime Minister said that, yes, everything was going fine, everything is moving on in this direction. And yet this new Prime Minister's come along and said, actually, nah, let's not do it. Maybe Delia had a word in her ear when she was spending 1,800 quid in the Norwich City club shop. But yes, this Prime Minister obviously doesn't fancy the new regulations that came out as a result of the fan-led review. And so the white paper isn't going to happen. Jan, are you surprised by this?
Well, this government has shown already that they're not a fan of any regulation whatsoever. So the fact that there was going to be regulation in football may not tie in with their ideology. But to be honest with you, I don't know. Have they given a reason as to why they're ditching it? Is it just because they don't have time across their legislative agenda to kind of make this happen? Or is it something deeper? Has there been anything said other than it's not going ahead?
Not that I've seen.
Right.
Not officially, no.
I would presume it's because they've got other things to do, the bonfire of regulations that they want to have. And so obviously that's going to take up a lot of parliamentary time, especially if there's letters going in for to get rid of her as well. So, yeah, I presume so. And I presume that really just something about football regulation just isn't important to them, or not to them either. Or maybe they just don't see it as populist enough. But I suppose this is the thing, isn't it? Johnson's government was populist. This isn't. This is more ideological. And so populist moves, and this is what we suspected this whole thing about why this government was so eager for the review. Now that's no longer a thing. They just think, well, we can't be bothered with this. Terry?
That's nail on the head, yeah. John Driscoll said this very, very eloquently as well on Twitter. I won't quote it because I haven't got it in front of me. But yes, it's essentially basically what you said. The populist governments see something like this as a great opportunity to be popular. And when you're voted in on a populist agenda, then it's perfectly consistent to go with a fan-led review. But yeah, Liz Truss is, well, she's ideological, but she's also being paid by people who are very, very ideological. And regulation just isn't in her makeup at all. So yeah, so it was very easy. I read also reports that the Premier League had paid for a lobby firm, had been working quite hard briefing against the fan-led review as well, because obviously it's not something that the Premier League want. The Premier League don't want to be regulated. So, yeah, this is where we are. And it was, you know, with fairly indecent haste, only a few days, if that, after government had resumed after the period of mourning. And it was straight out. Of course, it's been overshadowed somewhat with events that followed. But it's not a surprise, because we shouldn't be surprised because we said that this was a definite possibility. I'm pretty certain we said that there was in all likelihood going to be yet another change of prime minister, and that if that happens, then this could get kicked out. Or that simply the government, even with Boris Johnson, was so incompetent that they simply just would not necessarily been able to have worked out how to do it. And it just may not have happened. And then there might have been a general election. So it was always a fairly slender hope. But we have been given enough to think that this would actually happen. And that's, I think, where it's difficult. It's disappointing. But the most disappointing aspect of it is that we were given a sniff. We were given the impression that this would actually happen. And, you know, but what, you know, say Tories, full of shit. What a surprise.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Who knew the Tories were just capable of such duplicitousness, where there were no signs to suggest that they'd ever behave like that?
Well, this is a really good opportunity for the opposition to pick up what was a very popular policy and just run with it. We will enforce the findings of the fan-led review. You know, they've got an open goal in front of them at the moment, but it's not going to hurt just to throw something like that in, which seems, you know, infinitely sensible. It's popular. There's no real opposition to it outside of Premier League owners. So, yeah, I don't think it's dead.
Well,
depending on what happens politically, you know, with the next election and when that is, I don't think this is dead.
But when Gary Neville gets installed as a candidate, then there's this kind of thing we're back anyway, because as we know, Gary Neville's been outspoken, publicly criticised the government for the decision. And as we may, you may be aware, Gary Neville recently joined the Labour Party and is looking to become an activist. And I think he's looking at that as being the next stage of his career before he goes the way of Mark Lawrenson. So it's entirely likely that that will be something that he would want to bring. But my personal view is that this Labour Party wouldn't necessarily go for it because they're useless.
Well, Gary Neville was at the conference today, the Labour Party conference in Liverpool, and denied the fact that he had any plans for standing for Parliament.
So it's happening then.
So it's definitely happening, yeah.
Definitely happening.
Yeah.
He's learning to be a politician. Quite good at it then, isn't he?
Yeah. We'll soon see Gary Neville on Question Time. That should liven things up.
But no, he is grooming himself to be selected. It's just, I mean, he really has to wait a little bit longer, but it'll happen. He's got to transition out of Sky Sports. I think he's still got a few years at Sky Sports yet. So
I'm not sure he'd do Question Time. I think he'd do election night coverage, because that's got the big screens with things you can move around on it. And I think him and Cara, they would feel quite at home there. But Question Time, no big screens and punters just there.
He was on the front page of the Mirror today, wasn't he? Saying that tax cuts for the rich was immoral. Interesting, is it? Because when Gary Lineker started to get political, the Daily Mail Brigade sharpened their knives.
Yeah.
Really quickly, didn't they? They were out for him. With Gary Neville, that's going to be quite interesting, isn't it? Because he's not like a Gary Lineker kind of character. You know, he's very northern. He's very, you know, he doesn't come across as like a polished broadcaster. He's rough and ready and he's got his views and he's not afraid to express them. I hope that didn't come across badly there, because I really like watching him on the telly. I think he's a very good broadcaster. But do you know what I mean? He doesn't come. He didn't come out of the mold that Gary Lineker clearly came out of. Can they bring him down?
Oh, of course they can.
Well, I suppose they can, but it's not like they can pull him up for, you know, forgetting where he came from and things like that, because he clearly hasn't.
Yeah, but I think the main difference is that while, yeah, they are being outspoken with their political views, Gary Lineker is probably more likely to come out with something that the Daily Mail would call woke nonsense. I don't think Gary Neville is going to be saying things like that. He will say things about tax, but then again, that's just having an opinion on tax, isn't it?
Yeah, he's being very careful about what subjects he discusses and what he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's staying in his lane very much. And of course, Gary Lineker, there is only so much you can say about Gary Lineker.
Yeah.
So, and the Daily Mail know this. And so they want to go after Gary Lineker because they see him as a legitimate target in a way that they don't see Gary Neville for other reasons that cannot be really discussed.
Yeah. And the main thing really with Gary Lineker, of course, is that he works for the BBC.
Ah, this is also true.
And so the Daily Mail will always, always, always attack anyone who works for the BBC, especially if they have the temerity to have an opinion on something.
And also, to be fair, you know, I mean, like, you don't want to ruin the relationship with Sky, not when you're negotiating the latest double-paid Sky Sports spread in your newspaper, for example. If you sell advertising to private companies, you're going to be a little bit more circumspect about exactly, you know, where you hit them. And Gary Neville is high-profile Sky guy. I mean, he's, as Jan rightly points out, he's one of their better broadcasters. And, you know, I think that, you know, the powers that be at Sky Sports will hear of it if people go after him. You don't want to mess with Sky. Not even the Daily Mail wants to mess with Sky.
No, they don't.
You know,
they don't.
They're a big ass company with lots of money.
Yeah,
and lots of advertising spend to fuck you over with.
And also slightly evil as well.
Slightly less evil,
yeah,
but it's Comcast, isn't it? So it's still pretty evil. It's
still pretty evil. Right? Yeah.
Anyone who works in media, media is evil. Best thing to do is to say all mass media is evil, apart from the occasional ones that are not. None of which spring to mind off the top of my head,
including us.
Yeah, we're not mass media.
Oh no, that's true. Well, we're not mainstream media. That's what you're really saying, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I suppose I mean mainstream media. Yeah, mainstream. Yeah, well, we're not mainstream. We're not the MSM, mate. No. God, no. Not like them MSM types.
No. But I suppose this is the part of the show when we've got to start thinking about what mass media we will be watching this weekend.
That was beautiful, Grim. Absolutely beautiful.
We should be mass media with segues like that. You're wasted on us, Sibley. You know that. You're wasted.
Well, I didn't know this beforehand, but I put Watford in there. Sunday lunchtime, Stoke with their new manager will be playing Watford with their new manager. Jan, you'll be glued to that just to see how Alex Neil gets on against Slaven Bilic.
He's dead to me. No, that's quite an interesting narrative going into that game. Yeah, that'll be quite interesting.
And Gary Neville will have to tear himself away from the Labour Party conference to cover Man City versus Man United on Sunday lunchtime as well, which should be a good game. Big test for Erik ten Hag and his revitalised United side. He's made it past 10 games now, Erik ten games now. So, well, actually, no, it doesn't. No, he hasn't, not yet. I think this is his 10th game. So,
Graham.
So there's still time. There's still time for that prediction to happen.
Haaland scores like 20 goals against United. Yeah. And that's it. He's gone.
But also, I've got the joy of the North London derby on Saturday lunchtime as well. So that'll be great, won't it? But a fun, packed weekend of football awaits, including Porto Braga, Jan, the top two in Portugal. That should be a spectacular game, shouldn't it?
Should be, yeah. Braga, you know, everyone talks about the kind of big three in Portugal, but Braga are a serious force. And they're sitting second at the moment. Porto dropped some points last time out. So they'll be looking to try and turn the tables on them. But they're still 3 points behind, so it's gonna take more than just this win. I think because it's at Porto, I think Porto will probably win. But it should be a tough game for them. They'll make them work for it.
Yes. Well, if you want to see what we pick for all of the seven games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, put your email address in, and you will receive our weekly email. Comes at your Friday lunchtime, or you can come and read it on the blog. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, at Sound of Football, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
It's all itchy. I came on all itchy, Grim.
Stop scratching your face, man. What are you doing?
I suddenly start getting...
I want to pull my face off.
Oh, God. It just was really...
Yeah.
You know, you just got to scratch it.
You do. Yeah, well, it's over here.